Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. Welcome to the Autocar Podcast, My Week in Cars, with Pryor here, Cropley the other side of the desk. Happy New Year, Stephen.
And to you, mate, and to you. Did you have a good time over
Christmas? Oh, yeah, wonderful, mate. Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, wonderful. Where are we today?
Well, we're in Caffeine and Machine, and there's an office meeting. What a way to start a new year, eh?
I know.
Show up at 10:30, have a chat, have a coffee with the lads, talk about what a great year it's going to be next year, and... Yeah. Rock on.
It's pretty good, isn't it? It's pretty good. Steve, we have a letter from Mike Kemper, who says, good afternoon, guys. Long-term listener to the podcast, which is very kind. We've only been going 18 months. We'll take long-term. That's good. The ongoing saga of which EV Steve should buy is very interesting. I've just purchased a used Skoda Enyaq VRS and found, when I went to view it, I sort of recognised the registration number, and a bit of digging around, turns out it was an Autocar long-termer driven by our acting magazine editor, James Atwood. Question, have you ever bought an ex-press car? I know, Steve, you have bought the Dacia Duster, but are there any others? Have you ever bought a car and found out something interesting about it afterwards? Says Mike Kemper.
I've bought four, believe it or not. But the Berlingo was one of them 19 years ago. That was my own long-termer, and I loved it so much that I couldn't possibly send it back.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with the Duster. But the Alpine, which I now have, was also a fleet car. It came... we borrowed it very early in its life on the fleet. It came home to my gaff. My missus walked around it once and said, isn't this fantastic? You know, if we're going to buy a silly car, why don't we make it this one?
That's cool.
So we bid them on the car when it was... I think it had done 2,900 miles or something.
Yeah.
And bought it. And they were kind enough to not send it out to any more hairy arseholes.
any more road tests, any more days at Millbrook Proving Ground doing brake testing.
Yeah, that's it. And that was the story. So we have that. But the other one was a Mazda MX-5, which I had, that was Mark Tishaw's long-termer for a while. And what was amusing about that, I think I bought that with about 15 on it because he did a lot of miles. Mm. And we all did a lot of miles, actually. And that was another case of taking it home, driving it around the place with my missus and thinking, gosh, we really ought to hang on to this.
Yeah.
And it reached the end of its natural term with us. And I just spoke to the guys at Mazda and they passed it on to us, having put it through the usual Mazda used car system.
Yeah.
And but the thing that was amusing about that was that For years afterwards, I kept on meeting people who would say, good God, I did a lot of skids in your car, mate.
Is that unnerving, or is that okay? Or is that?
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Because the car's up to it, as we've proved, and it was perfect. There was nothing wrong with it, and it went through the system. There were no issues. We owned it for, I don't know, three-ish years, something like 3 or 4 years, and it was... great. I did a couple of hill climbs in it. It went up Prescott a few times.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And it was a good thing to buy. So nothing but good experiences.
Hmm. We've had occasionally, it's been a long time, but we've had letters in the past saying, oh, I've just bought a car and I've read this issue of Autocar from so-and-so. It turns out it was a press car. You road tested it.
Yeah.
I'm furious about it. Why wasn't I told, and what are you going to do about it? And you go, well... nothing. I don't know what you want me to do about it. But I don't... I mean, they're pretty well looked after, aren't they, in between times?
I think they're presented every time in immaculate condition, so it would have been cleaned a lot. And they always make sure the brakes are up to it and the tyres are up to it. And when they get defleeted, as the term goes, I think they're pretty well treated. So I've never had a bad experience. I think it's nothing but a good thing.
Were you... I don't know if you can talk about this or not. Were you... I'll find out. Were you going to buy a Land Rover Discovery off of fleet?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the fifth. We did this. We did this trip to Iceland. You know, when Land Rover used to do these mega expeditions, it was a Disco 3, and off we went to Iceland. I'd been driving this car for best thick end of 20,000 miles, I think. Off it went to Iceland. We were there for 4 or 5 days. All kinds of really difficult stuff. Very, you know, crawling over volcanic rocks and over icy creeks and beds and all God knows what. I remember at one stage it crashed through the ice and lobbed on the bottom of a riverbed.
Oh, wow.
But it was came back perfect. No, not a mark on the wheels. It had, was fitted with a monster underbody armor plate. But even so, it came back. And we were shaping up to buy this thing. And it, on the way down the M1, on the top of a transporter, on a foggy night, the transporter jackknifed and the car hit the floor from the top deck. Wallop. And all I saw of it from there on was a muddy photograph in the local press of these cars that have been spread all over the M1.
Yeah, no amount of underbody protection is going to save you from falling the top of one of those.
No, it would have been completely history. But Angela, my missus, went around for weeks with wearing the black armband because liked the car so much.
They were great, aren't they? I think the proper design classic now as well, aren't they? They look just perfect. I think they look spot on.
Yeah, in fact, I was in touch over the Christmas period with Andy Wheel, the who was the chief designer of that car, the Disco 3. He's still very proud of it, and he's got every right to be, I think.
Yeah, I think
he's now working on the new Jag. Won't tell me everything.
Interesting.
But, I feel consoled by the fact that Andy Wheel's at work on the new Jaguar, to be honest.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I have not bought an express car, but Mike, to your question, have you ever bought out a car and found out something interesting about it afterwards? No, but the dealer I did buy it from, my Land Rover Defender, independent specialist, I should say, not an official Land Rover dealer, was later jailed for 2 years for tax evasion. He claimed... they claimed they bought 31 Land Rovers when they'd actually bought two.
Oh, right.
And got 86 grand of VAT exemption, which the HMRC later discovered they didn't take very kindly to. But I like the car. It's fine. The car,
well, it's
the car
still
was
going
good.
Strong, isn't it?
Yeah, it's perfect, mate. It was 10 years ago, maybe 11 years ago, and 170,000 miles ago, I would say. And it's just, you know, old Defenders have their issues, but you just replace a few bits and soldier on. It's fine.
Same
engine, same turbo, one clutch, no injectors, no, you know, just occasional brake discs and bushes and the odd spring, and that's it.
There can't be many people who've done 170,000 miles in that time, I don't think.
No, probably not. It's that's having a bit of a quieter time at the minute because its usual keeper is... living in America, but it's just terrific, mate. I drove it a bit over the weekend, and I really like the steering.
Yeah.
It steers really. It doesn't ride very well. It's very noisy and everything else. But it's just, I find it really relaxing to drive.
You've got you've made the essential mod, which is to change the steering wheel, haven't you?
Yeah, it's got a much smaller steering wheel. Yeah, which helps because people talk about banging your elbow. It's never been a problem for me at all. Yeah, banging your right elbow on the door, people say, but it just doesn't bother me.
They just get, the thing about that Defender is that they get more different, don't they? Every time we drive a new car, you get back in that and you just, it's a bit more special.
I think. It's a bit of a reset every time. Anyway, but sorry, mate, we've banged on for 8 minutes and I haven't even started the podcast yet, which is about our respective columns for the 3rd of January edition, which is, the magazine's out now. You can find it... if you go to themagazineshop.com, or you can find it on the shelves. Anyway, we'll talk our respective columns a bit. Things to do in 2024, Steve. What are you going to do? What are you going to do more of this year?
It's so hard. My problem is I had such a fantastic 23. There was just a superb collection of interesting things happened. I didn't do very much overseas travelling, which I have to say I'm happy about because... You waste a tremendous amount of time in the airport, and I didn't do it this year, and I other people did it instead, and
I'm afraid I did it, mate.
you did, didn't you? You were back and forth.
Yeah,
and it does waste time, doesn't it?
Well, I was thinking about a column about this because we did, you know, back in the, I don't want to bring up the days of the pandemic again, but people used to, they said, you know, we found a way of doing things a bit differently. We'll bring more cars to the UK to save people going around the world. And it's a bit better for all considered. We'll have some long... I don't want to talk shop, but anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, I looked through our launch diary for 2023 and 2019, the last sort of two times. Basically, travel is back up to where it was before.
Yeah. Pretty much. But I mean, it's
just got, a bit too much of it, I think.
It's got something to do with you being a nice, amenable bloke, though. You know,
we'll say yes to everything.
Somebody says... We need a body to go to, you know, Missouri or somewhere.
Can you go to Korea for 6 days? Yeah, 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 fine. But yes, but I think in general there ought to be a bit less.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose things to look forward to in 24. Mm. Two things for me: the new Ford, the Explorer, and the and the Renault 5. I think they're real reset cars, those, because Renault 5, because it, I am old enough to remember the original Renault 5, which was a reset car, and if they can hit that kind of prominence and importance again, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And any new family Ford or sort of mainstream Ford is an important car to me.
Mm. Is this effectively a... Explorer's not a direct focus replacement, is it? But is the idea that it will take that sort
that
of
role? Yes, I think
the,
so.
In the range.
I think that's the role. They're trying to make it the mainstream car that the Ford people reach for.
And have we seen the final Renault 5 yet? Because it was a very cool concept last year. Have we seen the finish?
I think we've seen a few versions of the concept, but nobody's quite telling us whether or not the concept is the car. I mean, they imply that it's not far away, okay. Don't they?
Yeah.
But they've got... It would be interesting because they've got to fit the Alpine version of that car, the A290, is it? The... And that's going to be the hot hatch as well. So it can't be too. There are going to have to be sort of cooking versions of the Renault 5, and it will be interesting to see those, because all we've seen are very concept-y, you know, quite ornate ones.
And they look pretty cool, don't they? The concept.
Yeah.
I hope they look as good. Just as an aside, Matthew Saunders' road test editor has entered the building over the other side of me. He's got a piece of rocky road over there. Looks rather good, I've got to say.
I can hear him chewing at the mirror.
Steve, tell me about the Audi SQ8 e-tron.
Well, it's my smoker. It's just arrived, and I'll be driving it for the next few months. First EV I've ever had that I depend on daily, and I do quite a big mileage. I like driving, you know, so my idea of recreation is driving. You know, other people collect stamps. So it's going to be interesting to see how I get on with quite long haul stuff, you know, because I'm not particularly experienced at finding the right charging point and so on. So I'm going to be intrigued by that. The two things that stick out so far is how susceptible it is to, as all EVs are, to temperature, the mileage versus temperature thing. When you, in cold day, it does 220. Hot day, it does 260. And that's quite a difference to me.
It is.
And the other thing is I don't know if this is the National Westminster Bank's fault or mine, but I find that my credit card, which I use to, you know, at charging points, is inclined to retire every so often. If you don't reset it in somebody's convenience store and put the PIN number in, you can reach a touchpad and it sort of says, nah.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah.
So you have to go and buy a box of matches to reset your credit
card. The PIN thing.
I dislike that deeply, and I think we need keypads on charge points.
There ought to be a way around that, isn't there? Because there you could turn up somewhere in the middle of the night in a car park.
Yeah.
And there not be a shop around the corner where you need to go and do that.
I was reminded actually over the weekend we tried to do the Three Peaks Challenge in a Nissan Leaf. Do you remember that a few years ago?
I remember that, yeah. I mean, I didn't do it, but I remember somebody else doing it.
I was a driver. I was certainly not the runner, but I was a driver. And I remember getting to this Scottish charging point, primitive Scottish charging point in the middle of nowhere at about 3 a.m. trying to charge. And this message came on saying, this thing is out of action. And by the way, don't ring us, because the people who man it are, only work business hours. And I remember standing there saying to the blokes, Let's find this bloke's address and firebomb his house. I never felt so angry in my life.
That is frustrating. I just had to put in some expenses for a tank of petrol including a picture of a petrol pump in Scotland, which said 24-hour fuel. And I turned up at, I don't know, 5 to 6 in the morning, something like that. And there was a little tin hut with nobody in it. But it, sure enough, a pump that took a credit card had a PIN facility just in case. And then it said, do you want a receipt? And I said, yes, I do. And it just made this whirring noise and nothing happened. And I thought, hang on, what am I going to do about this? So I just took a picture of it going, there you go, I've put 90 quid in this car. Please pay my expenses. And to be fair, it's all fine. They did.
But amazing. Anyway.
The Jeep Avenger, mate, you spent a bit of time in one of those, haven't you, recently?
Yeah, it arrived just before Christmas. Mm-hmm. I was desperate to drive it because I think small EVs are, for the lightness and, you know, agility and so on, I just think they're more interesting than big fat ones. Mr. Tishaw was, because he's on the Coty jury.
He's the Autocar editor, of brand editor, isn't he? I suppose, the whole thing. And he is, yes, Car of the Year juror.
That's him. He went off and had a go at it during the year and pronounced it a really good thing. Mm. I mean, he was really, really keen on it, wasn't he? And so I wanted to have a go. I thought it was terrific. I thought it, you know, steered, rode well, nice size, pretty good range, not amazing, but not bad. Mm. And I think it was the embodiment of a Jeep, even though, as we know, with everything Stellantis does, you know, it's probably a Peugeot and a Citroen and a few Fiat and a few other things under.
Yeah.
But it had its own identity and it did a good job. Hmm. I could own one. No problem.
Yeah, it sort of fit. You know, sometimes a car turns up and you just think this is going to be the default recommendation for a lot of people when they say, I'm after a X that does X and X, and you go, okay, you should buy a Mini Cooper,
yeah,
or you should buy a 3 Series,
yeah,
or you should buy, I don't know, whatever else, a Caterham, you know, anything that just goes, right, that fits a Porsche 911, that just, and the Jeep Avenger seems to me to be one of those kind of cars that we would just be saying to people for a while, yeah, why don't you just get one of those?
Good idea for a feature, actually, isn't it? You know, we could just, if we went through the entire range of cars and tried to find the cars that most embody the you know, the important characteristics of buyers.
Yeah.
So it might be a bit of a brain stretcher, but
it'd
be an interesting thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's probably harder today just because there are so many more cars than there used to be.
Yeah.
The answer used to be buy a Golf, didn't it?
Yeah.
They'll just buy a Golf for me.
Yeah.
Well, it's so straightforward today.
Say a VW Golf or any Toyota.
Yeah. I've recommended so many Honda Jazzes and Toyota Yarises and Corollas to people who say, I just want to go from A to B.
Yeah.
They don't, because it's like saying you just want a fridge that keeps your food cold. You don't. You also want the light to come on when you open the door. You want the little egg thing. You want the thing to keep your salad
crisp. Nice ice cubes.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just one of those, just go, just buy it and you will never complain to me. Or a Kia Ceed.
Have you ever had a complaint, you know, somebody come back to you and say, you know, that advice you gave me, that was really crap?
No, I don't think I have. No, thankfully. I've had people completely ignore it.
Yeah.
And they say, what should I buy? And you go, well, you should get one of these, one of those, one of those. And they come back and go, well, you'll never guess, I bought a Suzuki Wagon R Plus.
Mind you, I am the man who set off one day to buy a Fiat Uno. This is back in the day, you know, when I was skint and I just needed transport. Set out to buy a Fiat Uno, came back with a Daimler 66.
Oh, Stephen. That is a shopping trip I would have liked to have
been on. It's pretty stupid.
That is really good going. Stephen and I are going to take a very short break. We'll be back with more, a bit more Suzuki nonsense, actually, in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Hello, welcome back to My Week in Cars. Steve, Dan Morton Bicknell writes to say, I recently read Steve's article on driving a Ford Capri around the ultra-low emission zone and beyond. Thoughtful and very informative, thank you very much. One point Steve makes is that road testers would often only drive cars during that era at 5/10. My question is, what exactly does driving at 10/10 mean? And is it important to the average driver who probably only drives at 2 or 3?
I think most people drive at sort of 5, 6, 7 myself. You know, judging by the, I mean, we've just come up the Fosse, or I've just come up the Fosse Way.
Yeah.
You've come west.
I've come across a decent road from the 422. Because caffeine in a machine is, I always find it hard to describe when people say, where is it? I go, well, it's in Warwickshire and sort of nearish Stratford and nearish Banbury. I've come up at the back road from Banbury, which is a nice bit of road.
But to judge by the number of people who are clamped up the backside of my 550 horsepower Bentley that I happen to be driving in, I think people drive it, you know, with a fair bit of energy.
Sometimes briskly,
10/10 is just the limit, you know. We drive cars on test tracks to try and find out what they do in extremis, don't we?
Yeah. When was the last time you drove at 10, what you would call 10/10?
I think it would have been on a test track recently. Just trying to think where the hell it was. I had a bit of a go on, you know, that little track at Bicester Heritage?
Oh, yeah. After we recorded the pod a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Yeah.
I went around there in the Audi, actually, and it demonstrated the things we know about it, that it weighs a hell of a lot, but the electronics are good. So even though the mass is trying to keep it going straight on, the electronics allow it to turn the way you want it to turn. It's one of those cars where you're not worried about safety, but you're worried about tyre wear a bit.
Mm.
So, Bicester Heritage.
That's cool. Ten tenths is going as fast as you personally can, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But what I meant by the comment about the Capri is that in the olden days, cars used to, the handling and ride used to fall apart more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a point in the sort of energy level where they behaved well, and this Capri did the same. But if you went a bit faster, it demonstrated its frailties pretty quickly.
Oh, interesting.
That's all I'm saying.
And I would agree if you do, that cars do that these days.
No, they're much better, I think.
Yeah.
Remember, we used to discover all kinds of weird quirks, didn't we? Mm. You know, funny steering effects and...
Yeah, there are some brilliant cornering shots and things like that of cars that are... almost on two wheels or three wheels, and all four of them seem to be pointing a different direction.
That's it. Very strange wheel angles.
Yeah.
Can't be right.
No. You can find more of those pictures in the Autocar archive.
Hey.
If you go to themagazineshop.com, you can subscribe to Autocar, and that brings you every issue that we have in the archive from 1895. And I think somebody said the other day that because the British Library has a full complement of back issues, any of the gaps in our own digital archive are going to be filled with the assistance of those.
Wow, that's good.
That's good, isn't it?
It is good.
It's an ongoing process to completely fill the digital archive, but it's pretty good. There aren't that many holes anyway.
No, you'd be going some to read it all at the moment, wouldn't you?
You would. Yeah, I haven't got through it yet, I must say. you can... two things to do. What should we do first? The British Motor Museum, you can own a car, sort of. Sponsor a car.
You have done so. I had you and me in mind for this because there's a car there called the Albion Dog Cart, 1902. 15, I think it is. Oh, God, I'm trying to think.
That's right. Yes, no, we talked about this before Christmas briefly, didn't we? 8 horsepower.
Yeah.
Was it regulated at 15 or something?
Yeah, that's right.
Bizarre like that?
I think it's supposed to not go over 15. You wouldn't want to go over 15 miles there, especially downhill. Anyway, the thing is, the news is, we did talk about it, as you say, but the news is they're going to let us run it in a Brighton run.
Oh, fantastic.
In first weekend of November.
Okay.
You and me.
Brilliant.
Hyde Park to Brighton.
Fantastic.
Very long. It'll take many hours, mate, but we'll get there.
What do I need to do in advance of that, Steve? Because I haven't driven anything of that age, I don't think.
Well, what they always do is invite you up there a week or two before to have driving lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got excellent blokes in the workshop that you know, just treat these things like a Ford Focus. You know, they just get in it and drive it. And they give you a bit of tuition. But I think the thing we're going to find with the Albion is that it is extremely easy to drive.
Oh, really?
It'll just be...
Have you driven it already?
Yeah, I've done two.
Oh, okay.
Brighton runs. Yeah. It wasn't one of the trips. It wasn't running particularly well, so my missus had to get out and run alongside up one of the hills.
Sure, she was thrilled. With are the pedals in a normal place, or are they all over?
I can't remember, to be honest. I think it's a tiller steering, though.
Oh, great!
And it's a high, so-called high wheeler. So right. You know how lots of cars of that era, or cars of that era, graduated to normal rubber.
Yeah.
You know, pneumatic. But I think it might be a. I'm just trying to remember, but it's got huge wheels, like a
right.
Like a kind of horse and cart.
Oh, so it won't have air in the tyres.
I don't think so. I can't remember.
Oh, mate, I can't wait to see this.
We'll find it online, but it's a primitive. But the thing that's nice about it is it just keeps plugging it away.
I look forward to this very much. And I look forward to, I'll wrap up warm.
The thing that's amazing about a Brighton run is how many people turn out to watch it go by. They still say, there's a couple of 100,000 people watch it.
Oh, really?
And you go down the Brighton, the A23 or whatever it is, and there are all these clutches of car enthusiasts. You know, the blokes from the Suzuki Swift Owners Club and the guys from the Austin 10 Owners Club. Yeah. And they all gather at a pub and they all wave as you go by. And
that's lovely.
You definitely celebrate the joy of motoring.
Yeah. On the subject of the Suzuki Swift, tell me more, because there's a bit in your column about the Swift.
Yeah, well, I can't even think where... I think Suzuki might have come up with a press release, but they were just saying that it was the...
Oh, that's right.
It was the best-selling hot hatch, wasn't it?
Yeah, and wasn't the... I've got your column here somewhere, mate. Isn't it something like they've sold 9 million Swifts?
Yeah, I think it's 8 or 9 million.
8 or 9 million Swifts since its introduction.
You think of Suzuki as a little company, sort of slightly marginal. But, of course, in India, which is the most populous nation on Earth, Maruti Suzuki is a huge, huge car seller.
Yeah, and don't they have more than a 50% market share or something like? Or yeah, am I confused?
It is massive.
Yeah.
I don't know about the percentages, but it is massive.
Yeah.
And the Swift, of course, is well up the range for them.
Hmm.
So it's a bit of a prestige vehicle, but it's a great car. It works everywhere, doesn't it? Swift.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, even though, as you say, we consider them a bit of a niche thing, I think they. Outsell Honda in Europe, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And a mate of mine texted me yesterday to say he's thinking about a new car to replace some others as a daily runaround. He was looking at Swift Sports, 8 or 9 years old. And I think they were 13 grand when new. They're still 8 or 9 grand now.
Yeah.
Which is just... It's true. I mean, I really enjoyed them at the time, but they felt a bit under the radar.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they were bought by fairly sensible people... used sensibly, not modified, not thrashed, not taken on track.
And really good dealerships too, I believe.
Really, really nice people
aren't
they?
So nice in service.
Yeah.
I've always found this, I ran a Suzuki Ignis for as a long-termer for a while, and I just found that people in the dealerships are always nice to you.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is good. It is good. How are we doing for time? 26. We've got time for, let's chat my column very briefly, mate. Very briefly. I took the train the other day.
Oh.
Turned up at the station. And
was this before, during a strike or anything? Or?
No. This was just during normal weekend hours. And I said, I want to go to Birmingham and back. And they said, that's £29.10. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. All right, fair enough. I mean, ultimately, I'm paying the German taxpayer who owns Deutsche Bahn, who owns another train company, which ultimately owns Chiltern Railways. So, but fine, whatever. But had I booked online earlier that day, I could have only spent £26.
Okay.
But I was travelling with somebody who had a network rail card. And they said, hang on a minute, ticket office bloke. What about if we're travelling together, we can share the discount, And he said, you can, but you can't go to Birmingham and back on a network rail card because it doesn't work that far. They were like, what about if we split the ticket via King's Sutton, which is halfway between me and Birmingham? So we get the discount as far as King Sutton, but then pay the full fare as far as Birmingham. You can do that, but you have to take a train that stops at King Sutton.
Oh.
You don't have to get off or anything, but you have to do that. And it just strikes me that I thought about this because I was driving to Scotland the other week and I was leaving at 4 a.m. to pick up somebody in Leeds on the way. And the navs are saying, if you leave at 5, you'll get there in time. But I know at 8 o'clock in the morning, everybody's going to want to get to. So I know in my own head, I've got to leave earlier to be there on time to get to where I eventually want to go at the right. And I suddenly thought, actually, this totally makes sense to me. What if there are a bunch of people to whom that doesn't make sense, but to whom this whole train thing does make perfect sense? They understand entirely that if you book 3 months in advance. But the difference is, if you go somewhere in a car, the time it takes may change, but the cost will be the same.
Yeah.
And that is the thing about the train system that ought to be the same. That it doesn't matter what you... Ultimately, if you want to go now or if you want to go in 3 weeks' time,
yeah,
there should be a clearer way of saying how much it's going to cost you.
Absolutely.
And that's... And there was a, I believe there was a plan to do that, which has not been yet put into action to simplify.
Well, like, it's the thing they come up with a bit before every election, don't they? They say it's we're going to sort it out, don't worry.
Yeah.
And they don't.
They don't, yes. Anyway, next time I go, especially if there are four or five of us going, as there were, I think I'll just get in the car.
Nearest MPV. Yeah,
I think absolutely. So. But I don't know. I suppose there are a bunch of people who would look at a map and think, okay, if you've got to go, as I have to go to Northumberland via Leeds, and you've got to be there for 9:30 in the morning, they'll go, well, okay, I'll get in the car at 5, I'll be there at 8, and I'll be in Northumberland by 9.
Yeah.
But I know that's not the case because we do it a lot. But maybe there are a bunch of people who don't know that. And maybe driving is as baffling to them as other forms of transport are to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. I have done a few train trips recently where we did make preparations, I think, a week before, and it worked out okay. But that just seems iniquitous to me to have to, you know, remember a week before to buy a bunch of train tickets. Why can't you just arrive and go?
Yeah, and that should be the way it's what it's about. Anyway.
Stick with the car, mate.
Well, I will for now, mate. Yeah, but see, it would be the only way to get here this morning.
Indeed.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's pod, I think, Steve.
Oh, we can see whether Mr. Saunders has got any of his rocky road left.
Well, yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. No, he's given us a sad shake of the head to suggest absolutely not, mate. No. Thank you for joining us. There's more My Week in Cars this time next week. The Christmas special with Richard Hammond is still available at your favourite podcast provider. It's good, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
really
enjoyable.
Nice. Yeah, really good fun.
Hope he had a good Christmas.
Yeah. And I don't know where we're going to be next week. I'm not sure it'll be anywhere as nice as this, but we'll see what we can do. Thank you, Steve.
Cheers, mate.
See you next week.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.